and welcome to the H2P podcast here on DK, Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I'm your host, Gary Morgan. With me, as always, is my good friend and the beat writer over at DK, Pittsburgh Sports, for all of Pitt Athletics, Corey Crisson. You're finally able to spread your wings a little bit, brother. No, not just basketball 24/7. Now you're able to start dealing with football again. And despite all that, we're still going to start with basketball, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. It's good to be back. We're testing a new microphone today on this end, so it's going to go either really good or really bad on my end. Happy WrestleMania week to those who celebrate Friday and Saturday. It's coming up. The big show, the showcase of immortals. It's always great. I love watching WrestleMania. I'm a big wrestling fan, and definitely going to throw down for that next Saturday and Sunday. Two-night event. But yeah, we're starting with the NCAA tournament. Obviously, Pitt is out, but this has been like historic in so many different ways, Gary. And with the Elite Eight, we're recording this on Saturday, and the Elite Eight is still to be played. We're going to have a Final Four by the time this show wraps up. But wow, what a tournament it has really been. And for the first time ever, no one seeds in this Elite Eight.
Insane. Absolutely insane. I mean, the people that win the office pulls this year are definitely going to be the ones that pick the pretty color uniforms or the neat looking mascots. And I, you know, part of me loves that because, and also, man, this is confirmation for me. Sorry, any sponsors I'm not aware of. This is confirmation for me. Do not bet on sports.
Yeah, you just never know. Anybody that says they've been a winner in the NCAA tournament is lying. Anybody that says they've cashed out on the NCAA tournament is lying. The coolest thing about this whole thing, Gary, one of San Diego State, Creighton, Florida Atlantic, or Kansas State is guaranteed to be playing for a national championship. And on the other side of the bracket, UConn, Gonzaga, Miami, Texas. Like, one side is the power programs with UConn, Gonzaga, Miami, Texas. The other side is like, Kansas State has been really good all year. I don't want to put them down, but Florida Atlantic, the winningest program in college basketball this season, and then a 5 and a 6 seed, San Diego State and Creighton. I mean, you can't get any better than the NCAA tournament. You can't get any better than just the parity of the two sides, where you have one side of maybe some unexpecteds, maybe some unknowns. Of course, no 1 or 2 seeds. And then the other side, you got the 2 seeds, you got the power programs, you got the big names in there.
Yeah, it's the diversity is nice. I'm enjoying it. It's fun. And as you know, I'm a fan of Pitt. It's not obviously Pitt is not in every conversation for every national title when it comes to these big sports like basketball and football. They've done well. They've definitely turned the programs around and they're in the conversation, but they're not expected to be in those conversations. So when you get to a tournament like this and teams like Creighton are in the Elite Eight, and you know, it's hopeful to me. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel like, hey, why not Pitt? Why couldn't they do it? Then I think to myself, well man, everything right now is so shaded by these 5 and 6 year seniors. Like FAU's roster is older than the Bobcats, you know? I don't know how you judge it really. It seems like the older rosters really made hay, including Pitt.
Well, that is why when Pitt played Xavier, I know on paper it might have looked like a mismatch, and obviously we saw that it was a mismatch. Yeah. But that is why there was removed reasonable doubt that Pitt could beat Xavier. There was a thought that Pitt could beat Xavier based on that fact. It was such a deep field this year. I mean, Princeton made a run to the Sweet 16 for crying out loud. We saw, obviously, Fairleigh Dickinson beat Purdue. The one seeds, like Alabama with all of their stuff aside, right, with Miller and Oates and what they've done and said, all of that stuff aside, really damn good college basketball team. But, I mean, did you see that San Diego State beat them by 7. Like, yeah. They put a sizable win on them. Houston, who we both on this podcast 2 weeks ago said that's the best team we've seen in college basketball all year. Miami took them to the woodshed. 14 points that win in the Sweet 16. And this is the time, by the way. I know, you know, Pitt fans listening to this might not want to hear this, but, you know, credit where it's due, and it's true. Jim Larrañaga deserves his flowers. George Mason, obviously, he took to that Final Four, you know, about a decade and a half ago. He's taken Miami now to two straight Elite Eights. Miami won the regular season ACC championship. This program needs to be talked about as one of the best programs in college basketball. It just does. With you know, Isaiah Wong, obviously ACC Player of the Year. They have shooters. They have Wuga Poplar. They have, you know, Nigel Pack. You got Norchad Amir. I mean, the depth they have is tremendous. And the fact that Pitt was able to beat them once in the comeback fashion they did, and then the second time it came down to the final shot, obviously the last regular season game of the year, that just shows more of the parity that's in college basketball. And then within the rest of the ACC, I mean, when you're going on these tournament runs, obviously some teams are more equipped to make these runs than others, right? We see it every year. We see it every year. And you're seeing that right now with this Miami team led by Jim Larrañaga. But it just goes to show that, like, Pitt kept it close with Miami. They won one of them. They lost one of them. And Miami just knocked off the team that you and I both just said objectively was the best in college basketball all year. So I love how deep this field is becoming. And you talked about transfer portal and how that's affecting it. It is just raising the bar on these programs. You know, the field of 68 has never been deeper. There were probably a dozen teams into this tournament that we could have confidently said they can win it all. When you really think back and look at it, I mean, UConn-Gonzaga, we're recording this before their Elite Eight games. Like, UConn-Gonzaga is such a delicious matchup. And to think that Gonzaga had to do it again against UCLA in the Sweet 16 to come back and win like that. I mean, just an unbelievable tournament this has been, and I can't wait to see what the Final Four looks like.
Yeah, it's been crazy, and every game has really been pretty competitive. There's been a couple blowouts, but for the most part, these have all been down to the last 5 minutes. The outcome was still in question, and you can't ask for more than that in a tournament. It's been a very satisfying March Madness, you know, and to be completely clear of COVID and just have everything kind of just go wackadoo makes total sense, doesn't it? I mean, like, you wanted real madness. I think we got it.
I think we absolutely got it in its highest form. It started, you know, Pitt, Mississippi State was as madness as it gets. Jamarius Burton making that shot with 10 seconds to play. And then, like, some of these games
changing, like, what, 19 times or something? Yeah.
A lot. But, like, the wow factor in some of these, just the Sweet 16 games, again, San Diego State beats Alabama by 7. Miami blows the doors off of Houston. You got Princeton in there, you know. Texas putting a pounding on Xavier, which probably shows what might have happened against Pitt. So maybe a blessing in disguise in that way. But FAU wins by, you know, 7 over Tennessee. UConn blows out Arkansas and Eric Musselman, who took down Kansas the round prior. Gonzaga UCLA was another classic. Kansas State overcoming Tom Izzo, Michigan State. I mean, the storylines, the headlines, the madness, it's all been tremendous this March. And we've really been lucky with this 23 NCAA tournament.
That's great, man. Let's take a quick break. We come back. Let's talk a little spring ball because everybody loves football in shorts. All right, and welcome back to the H2P podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports. Corey and Gary with you, and spring is in the air, man. Spring is in the air, and football in shorts is going on. What have you seen down there at Pitt spring practice?
1 week down on the south side, and today as we record this on Saturday, Pitt is going through their first spring scrimmage. They went over to Acrisure Stadium and, you know, did what they do. Close scrimmage, obviously. And the two things that have stood out to me so far, I paid close attention to the offensive line this week because, let's be frank, over the last 2-3 years, it has been Carter Warren, Marcus Miner, Owen Drexel, Jake Cradle, Gabe Hoy. We've known this across the line from left to right. Four of those five guys are not there anymore. Carter Warren, Marcus Miner, Owen Drexel, Gabe Hoy, all since moved on. And we'll transition over into the upcoming Pitt Pro Day here throughout the show. But that was the biggest point of intrigue to me because if you remember last season, Warren got hurt early. Hoy had nagging injuries all year. Owen Drexel got hurt early. So that really forced Dave Borbley and Pat Narduzzi's hands to reconfigure, readjust the O-line. And despite those three major injuries, Israel Abanikanda still led the ACC in rushing. So, like, they didn't really miss a step in that regard of run blocking. But now, Branson Taylor at left tackle. I think Ryan Bear has a shot at left guard. And I think they like him at left guard. That's a big boy to put inside.
Yeah.
Alongside Jake Cradle at center. You're going to have Blake Zubovic playing right guard. And then Matt Gonsalves. By the way, like, underrated stat here. He was third team all ACC last year. Was Matt Gonsalves at right tackle. So Pitt's offensive line, and I wrote about it this week, like, even though there are four essentially, like, from last year's week one starters to this year's week one starters, essentially four replacements coming in, they're not really going to miss much of a beat. They're still bringing experience, and they're still bringing a certain level of depth. When you think about Jason Collier to back up, you know, at guard and some tackle, you got Terrence Enos backing up at guard. You got Terrence Moore backing up at center. So, like, even though there are new pieces, like, what's new is still the same. Like, it's weird how they've been able to do this over the last 4 or 5 years with this offensive line. And the profile of it is really similar too. All really good run blockers. And you think this offense this year under Phil, and, you know, with getting Day-Day Reynolds and having Kanate Mumfield and Bub Means in year two in this, and Gavin Bartholomew, we hope, gets targets this year. you would think that it would be a little more pass happy. I'm not going to say they're going to sling the ball all over the field. But I think there could be a lot more balance in this offense. And the fact that there are so many returning linemen coming back, I think is going to be so crucial to the development of Dracovic as the season goes. And then number two, real quick, was, and I'm writing on him today, is Javon McIntyre at safety. You know, when you have Brandon Hill and Eric Hallett moving on to the NFL, and you've had a lot of success over the last 5 years developing defensive backs, Javon McIntyre, Donovan McMillan are taking over as this team's safeties this year. And McIntyre, if you remember, at the end of last year, had the interception in the Miami game, had the big play in the Sun Bowl as well. Yeah. So, you know, having a guy like that, young, developed, former three-star, we know how Pat Narduzzi loves his three-stars and how he develops all these defenders, like, I'm not saying low end three stars, but like middling three stars. And he turns these guys into bona fide, just NFL ready players. And much can be said about the defensive backfield over the last handful of years. I think McMillan and McIntyre, for that matter, and particularly McIntyre, has a really good shot at just developing into a really special player. And this is kind of his time now. So those were the two things I looked for here in this first week of spring practice.
Well, it's not the Ramon Foster show, so line play isn't going to get as much on this one as it tends to over there. How does Phil Dracovic look? I mean, I think everybody is probably in general pretty happy that he has decided to come back home for his, you know, super senior year or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But what, how does he look? I mean, does he look like he's got a good arm? Does he look like he's moving well? He's had so many injuries over the years that you don't know if he's the same player he was we watched in high school.
I think he's looked good, but I don't think he's pressing quite yet. And pressing might be a harsh word for it, but what I mean by that is kind of going balls to the wall on everything. You know, we're in week one of spring practice, week two, excuse me, of spring practice. I'm in week one. They're in week two of spring practice. They're just getting to their first scrimmage. You know, I don't think Phil is necessarily going to turn on the jets until maybe the final week or two of spring ball before the spring game. And then obviously you have a summer period of workouts before fall camp. But the one quarterback that I was kind of intrigued to watch among the three between Phil and Christian Veyer and Nate Yarnell was Nate Yarnell, because in my mind, Phil's the one, Christian's the two, and Nate's the three. And like, what we saw from Nate last year, obviously against Western Michigan, he got to play a snap in the Sun Bowl. I guess you could throw that in there as well. But we know how much Pat Narduzzi and Frank Cignetti like Nate Yarnell as a quarterback. And my fear, and that's a strong word, fear, is that could Nate Yarnell get pushed out? Just based on the simple fact that Phil, it's his team this year. Christian's right there waiting in the rings. And then Ty Dieffenbach is a true freshman. Like, where does Nate Yarnell fit into this whole equation? And I watched some throws from Nate Yarnell this week, and I was impressed. I was impressed with Nate Yarnell, and not to say that Phil or Christian were not impressive. That's not what this is. What I mean by this, what I mean by this is, I saw Nate Yarnell throw some heat, some fastballs.
Yeah,
I saw him zip some stuff in. You know, a couple of slant routes, couple of, you know, posts, couple of crosses, and I saw him just put some absolute fire on these. So I'm curious to know by the end of this spring process on one of the like. Many things on my spring ball checklist is where do these quarterbacks slot after spring camp? And to me, again, I feel like Nate is kind of the odd man out, but I want to see how Narduzzi and Cignetti treat it with that position.
Yeah. Again, a guy with Dracovic's history, you want a backup that can play. Mm-hmm. So it might be more important even to have that third stringer be somebody that you really feel could step in. So not a bad thing to have a deep room there. But Corey, you're right. We should talk a little bit about Pro Day because that's what people are going to be really focused on very shortly here. And we should take a quick break before we do that. Let's take a quick break, come back and talk a little bit about Pitt's Pro Day this Wednesday. All right, and welcome back to the H2P podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. It's time to talk Pro Day. Everybody has been doing mock drafts religiously, Corey. I mean, some people have done 40 or 50 of them so they can claim they were right come hell or high water.
It's like brackets.
Absolutely.
Sheet of integrity.
Absolutely. I think first person to like my tweet that said that the other day, comparing the two, because
yeah,
there are so many of these people. They do 40, 50 of these mock drafts, and then come draft time, they'll have one thing right, and they'll be like, see, I told you. And I'm like, no, you don't get to do that.
You don't get to do that. Here's the thing with mock drafts, though, the difference between that is because like news happens and things happen. So the mock draft 3.0 like will adjust to saying, you know, who's the kid from Georgia off the top of my head, Carter?
Yeah.
Like what happened with him? You know, I get it. But sheet of integrity, my bracket stunk, by the way. To those that like saw the story that Corey Geiger and I wrote and then like based their March Madness picks off of it, I am terribly sorry.
Anybody that bases them off of anything, I'm sorry. I mean, like it's all guesswork and a white coat. So Pitt has 13 guys that are going to be putting on display at the Pitt Pro Day. You know, it's big names. Izzy, Glagicansi, Spassier, Haba. I mean, like, it's a who's who. We all know the names. What are you most excited about seeing, and are you hearing anything about who's interested or who's showing up? Because we know the Steelers are going to be there.
They better be. That's a cheap trip to take. If you're the Steelers, the obvious components of this are Glagicansi and what teams are there to specifically watch him, because with these mock drafts again, he's been mocked anywhere from 10, Mel Kiper, ESPN, to the Steelers at 17, to the end of the first round, to out of the, like, he's been probably the rangiest prospect in all these mock drafts. And of course, a lot of us have, dare I call it, recency bias when it comes to the combine. And
well, he's undersized too. Like, if you just want to talk about Cansey for a minute, he's undersized. Sure. So in mock drafts, you're going to have some people that see past that. you got some people making the Aaron Donald comparison, and they've just decided that's what's going to happen with him.
Mm-hmm. No, right.
So he moves up the board and everything. I don't know. I don't know where he's going to go, but I could see it anywhere in the first or second round. Even the third, I could see him slipping to if things fell right.
I don't know about that far. Well,
you never know. You never know.
For I don't know about it, that far.
It could be anything like that. It just a matter of teams that actually need a defensive tackle. You know, you might see that move. People that don't think he can handle the interior.
Oh, there's a lot of things fit.
Like that.
Yeah, it's about fit too. That's always important and imperative. But he's a talented player. He could go in the first round very easily. And there's going to be a lot of teams that come to see him. You know, every NFL team should come see Kalijah Kansi, at least test out. And obviously the intrigue with him is, can he do it again, right? Can he put up the same or similar numbers that he impressed with at the combine, running the fastest 40 for a defensive tackle since Aaron Donald, you know, since what it was, 2006, I think it was.
Yeah.
So Kalijah is going to be the headliner in all this. And then, you know, you look at Haba Baldonado, who's got just freakish intangibles, right? You look at him, he's an athlete.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see what teams look at him as a defensive end. You know, Servasié Deniz, smart linebackers and smart centers, I've heard it, can play forever. Smart linebackers, smart centers always have a spot because smart centers know how to not just block, you know, playing on the offense, but they can play special teams. Servasié Deniz, to me, is not only a smart linebacker, he's also a really damn good special teams player.
Yeah.
Some team is going to want him for something as a utility player on the defensive side of the ball. And then, you know, thinking about like mock drafts and speaking of all that, like where do Eric Hallett and Brandon Hill, we talked about Javon McIntyre, you know, earlier in the show at defensive back, like where do these two DBs check in? How does Israel Abanikanda test out? Because let's be frank, you know, didn't play in the Sun Bowl, you know, was a little bit dinged up at points last year, obviously won the ACC rushing title, but the way that running backs are valued now, like Bijan Robinson is going to go in the first round out of Texas, but the way that running backs are valued and drafted nowadays, you're not going to see Izzy come off until day two, day three. When's that going to be? So where does he test out in comparison to not just the combine, but also to, you know, some of the rest of the running backs doing pro days across America? You know, look at Carter Warren at offensive line. He sat out all year with a knee injury. Marcus Minor, who I think has at minimum practice squad potential. Like there are players not besides Kalijah and Haba in my mind, who are the top two that are going to be picked off the board via Pitt that I think have serious NFL potential one reason or another. So it'll be a good pro day. There's going to be a lot of teams there. I would hope all 32 are there, but you know, you're going to see a ton of them. And obviously, you know, this is exciting just based on the concept of, like, this is the final home stretch towards the draft. And before you know it, you know, we'll be at April 28th. We're a month and a few days away from it. So it's exciting, man. We'll see what happens. It's going to be fun. It's going to be Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. over on the south side. It's obviously close to the public, but, you know, I'll be there for everything, taking notes, tabbing charts and all that fun stuff. So.
That's good stuff, man. I'm excited to see what you write up about it. What does it do for a program like Pitt? When you can put on a pro day and have 13 legitimate contestants in that contest, you know what I mean? Like that speaks well for the team, really.
Well, when you're in Pitt's position, you're a Power 5 program, you know, you hope that you have a good number of players that come in and out every year that are able to at least test out for it. Like, okay, looking at some of the players that are involved here, and this is no disrespect meant to these players, but like Destylan Alexander, for a perfect example, class human off the field, all world human off the field, but does he have NFL potential? Owen Drexel, class human off the field, awesome center for Pitt for 4 or 5 years. How does he test out to the NFL? Jared Wayne was the leader of the receivers room, was a huge part of this offense for years. How does he test out for the NFL? Tyler Wiltz, who played FCS football for 4 years, came here, had a really good year last year. How does he test out? So like even from the players that might not have draft stock per se to sell, this program still has really good players to market and sell. You know, look at the Sun Bowl run last year and look at the ACC championship run from a couple of years ago. Like, a good number of these players, Tyler Wiltz probably excluded because he just transferred in. But all these other players, these 12 players, had a role in that. Yeah. Like, this program has winning to sell, even though, like, people might look at 9-4 as a quote-unquote disappointment. Like, 9-4 is still something to sell. Having a DeMar Hamlin and a Damari Mathis and a Jordan Whitehead and a Kenny Pickett, and I could keep going, a Jimmy Morrissey, like, all these players, Weaver, like, all these players that have recently gotten drafted and developed into the NFL and are, by the way, pretty good players. Brian O'Neill, like, yeah, are pretty good players in the NFL. That's a selling point. Like, this is an attractive thing, and it's an attraction for this pro day. This pro day is an attraction that takes place. So it's great for the program. It's great for the ACC, by the way, because look at, like, if you want to play defensive line in the NFL, or if you want to play cornerback in the NFL, Pitt's a great place to come do it. So just in this pro day alone, Deslin Alexander, you look at Hava Baldonado, you look at Eric Hallett, Brandon Hill, that's four. Kalijah Cansey, that's five. That's five out of the 13 right there that either play D-line or DB that are testing out of this pro day. So it's just like a culmination of a lot of things, obviously. And it starts with Pat Narduzzi and his ability to scout and develop some of these three-star talents. Not a lot of these guys. In fact, I don't know if any of these guys were four stars. I'd have to go back and check. But I don't think any of these guys were four stars that are testing out for pro day. But that's
not
just
that I recall. No.
But that's just Pat Narduzzi and the way that his program works.
It's also been what he could get, you know, for a while there. I do think that we're going to see some of that increase in certain areas here as they grow reputation, you know, especially they start pumping out, you know, you put out two defensive tackles like Aaron Donald and Kalijah Cansey and, you know, pretty recent succession. That speaks pretty well to what you can do with that position, and you might have some four-star recruits looking at Pitt, you know. So I just think this stuff, all in all, it's been a really good ball rolling down a hill scenario for Pitt. They really are picking up steam in a lot of athletics circles, and this pro day is just a continuation of that. I'm super excited that there's this many players involved.
Speaking of picking up steam with athletics, I have no update on the women's basketball search job for new head coach. And I guess, funny enough, we saw Heather Like at the NCAA tournament, and I completely did not ask the question. So that's my bad for an update on the search, because, you know, there is still a women's basketball coaching search going on. You know, we're fully into the spring sports schedule now. Baseball's going on, and I'll be checking them out here pretty soon, hopefully. So, yeah, I mean, when it comes to football, like, this program has had relatively good success in the Narduzzi era. Like, let's not forget that. It's hard to win in Division I college football. It really is.
Yeah.
And when Clemson was so dominant for however many years it was, and now you see teams like North Carolina with Drake May rising up, Florida State's expected to be really good this year. So it's going to be a fun year in the ACC, but with what Pitt was able to do last year, you know, just looking at that season, 9-4, winning the Sun Bowl, beating UCLA, earning some wins over ranked teams. This is really a good thing that you have as many players testing out, and then the potential for these players to get drafted too is there. So we'll see what happens. Pro Day is going to be fun, no doubt.
Good stuff, man. And Corey, great job covering NCAA basketball. I wish that it had gone on a little bit longer, but, you know, the tournament itself is still fun. So let's wrap that up. Next week, I'm sure we'll be talking about that. Until then, I don't got anything else. If you don't got anything else,
I'm all good, sir. H2P, yeah. Hey, as they say.
H2P.